Radio Influence, podcasting redefined.
Holiday season and Christmas time in the air, and you know we are coming strong with it here as part of We've Seen That. It is our movies podcast, the 80s, 90s, and more. I am in the Christmas spirit. Ho, ho, ho. So too is he. I'm TJ Reeves, based in West Central Florida. He's the famous Jay, Dallas-Fort Worth area. Jay Betzel, you in the holiday spirit? What's going on?
Yes, sir. And by virtue of us doing Christmas Vacation a couple of weeks early, we have an extra week to do a holiday movie. And for that, we're going to do...
Oh, I think we're gonna have fun with one that... I don't know how many people remember how big a deal this was in terms of popularity and the box office, because... again, it's been more than 25 plus years, but this movie is a really big deal from the early 1990s.
Huge, huge. It was a huge deal. And the year it came out, it was out forever. You know, we've talked about these movies these days where the schedule's already set, where it'll be in the theater for X amount of days, then it goes on digital, then it goes on Netflix and Amazon, and then it shows up on HBO within 6 or 7 months. We're back on... I was a kid, you could almost set it where, you know, within 6 or 7 months it'd be on VHS and I could take it home and pop it in the old VCR and watch it. Where now, you know, those days are over. You know, I mean, and also, if you know a movie came out in November, you knew the following November it'd be on either HBO or Showtime, whoever, or whichever one of the paid cable outlets had the deal with the specific studio. Where now you never know. Movie might come out in March. You may see it in September or October on HBO, just based on what the specific movie's deal is.
And what the popularity is. So it's a movie that launched Macaulay Culkin. It's definitely a classic, and let's do it officially.
Where are you going? We're going to miss the plane!
When the McAllister family left on their Christmas vacation...
Did we miss the plane?
No, you just made it.
Yeah!
They forgot one small thing.
Have yourself.
I have a terrible feeling.
Christmas.
Did you lock up?
Let yourself be light.
Do we set the timers on the lights?
Mm-hmm. What else could we be forgetting?
Our troubles will be ours.
Kevin!
Home alone.
Police in the northern suburbs are on the lookout for a pair of burglars who are calling themselves the Wet Bandits.
We know that you're in there.
It's Santa Claus and it's Elf.
Get off my property.
This is my house. I have to defend it.
Where's your mother?
My mom's in the car.
Where's your father?
He's at work.
What about your brothers and sisters?
I'm an only child.
Where do you live?
Can't tell you that.
Why not?
Because you're a stranger.
He's a kid. I mean, what can a kid do to us?
Kids are stupid. I know I was.
You still are, Marv.
This is it.
Ow! I don't care if I have to get out on your runway and hitchhike. I am going to get home to my son.
Where are you, you little creep?
I'm gonna kill that kid!
Why'd you take your shoes off?
Why are you dressed like a chicken?
Gus Polinski, Polka King of the Midwest. If you have to get to Chicago, we'll gladly drive you.
Hey, guys.
Yesterday, he was just a kid. But tonight, he's a home security system.
You guys give up, or you're thirsty for more?
From John Hughes.
You know, I got a feeling this is going to be your best Christmas ever.
A family comedy without the family.
Yeah!
Home Alone.
Are you here all alone?
I'm 8 years old. You think I'd be here alone? I don't think so.
Directed by Chris Columbus, coming November 16th.
Home Alone, starring Macaulay Culkin, as you mentioned, is from Fox. It was released November 16th. 1990, its opening weekend, it made $17,081,000, which put it at number one. For the year 1990, you want to guess where it was?
I think it made a few more dollars than $17 million. Tell me more.
For the year, it was numero uno, number one for 1990. We'll go the next few afterwards, because we've done 1990 multiple times on our show so far. Number one, Home Alone, followed by Ghost, Dances with Wolves, Pretty Woman, The Original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Hunt for Red October, Total Recall, Die Hard 2, Dick Tracy, and Kindergarten Cop rounded out the top 10. Huge movie, as you alluded to when we first started. It was a monster hit. And did you see this at the theater?
I am trying to recollect the best that I can. I do not remember this in the theater. I was in college at that time. During the holidays of 1990, I would have been back home in Florida. I went to college in Memphis. I don't remember going to see this one in the theater in Florida. I believe I do remember this one on VHS in and around the time that it was available. And we love reminiscing for the audience just finding us through Radio Influence, or whether you're now subscribing, subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn. To the show, too, we've seen that so that it automatically comes to you. So, again, if you're new to the program, we're big on the Blockbuster video days. I think you made reference to it just a second ago. And this is before they were DVDs in Blockbuster. They were actual VHS tapes, Be Kind and Rewind, right, Famous Jay? I do remember Be Kind, Rewind, Blockbuster, Home Alone. I think I had that a couple times.
Well, do you remember?
Yeah.
Just copies of like JFK that would be two cassettes because the movies were so long.
I do remember.
I remember stuff like that. I remember being so defeated when you would run to the back new release wall and the movie you were looking for wasn't there was no cassette behind it. It was an empty wall, and then you would walk up to the counter and they would give you so much attitude when you would say, "Hey, can you check the return box to see if Home Alone might be back?" And they would look at you like you were so annoying.
You had to picture the face like if you go to
a restaurant and you ask for something special, picture the face of the waiter when they walk around the corner, you know, and how irritated they are with you. And that's how the Blockbuster video people would look at you to your face sometimes.
I don't know how you had that problem because, see, I had it worked out. I had an inside man. I had a friend of mine that was working at Blockbuster Video that would always tip me off that, hey, we got Home Alone or JFK or what Ghost, like you mentioned, or on and on from 1990, Die Hard 2, whatever. We've got it in, and I've got an extra one right here because somebody just returned it, and they would –
You had a guy back then. You always have a guy. How'd you get a guy?
You got to get a hookup, even at Blockbuster Video, because you're right, because you would go up there and there would be people, and now we digress, there would be people who would just hound the counter waiting for people to come walking back up and put their videos back in the return bin to see if they could be the first ones to sift through it. It was not quite the same magnitude as these awful Black Friday scenes that you now see on the internet with everybody trying to mass Royal Rumble it brawl each other to go get stuff, but it was almost that crazy at times at Blockbuster, especially on Friday night or Saturday night where people are hovering around the bin. So you had to have somebody on the inside that would be able to
hook
you up.
By the time I got to high school, I had a few friends that would, you know, take care of you, but I did have a friend that worked there who was just miserable when he was up there. And he would tell me if someone was waiting for a movie and it came in and they were hanging over the counter, that he'd leave it in there and tell them it wasn't there.
Especially if he didn't like those
people. For whatever that's worth. Yeah, if he was annoyed, he was trying to check people out. And there's somebody every single time a car pulled up. Oh, hey, can you check? Hey, can you check? So the gone are those days. Now you can literally just pull out your phone, your laptop, your smart TV, whatever, and press play and pretty much see whatever you want.
Yes, it's a different time, a different age, and I know some have a hard time grasping that we actually would go to a video store and try to rent a video.
What about late
against
fees?
Everybody
you believe
else?
We had late
oh yeah,
fees?
And they'd rack them up because it was like, was it like $1.50? It was either $1 or $1.50 a day that you didn't bring
I didn't
it back.
Get those. I would face the wrath of my mom and not get to, but again, to rent anything for a couple of weeks. I would walk to the video store and take it back rather than.
But you gotta have the inside man who would have the ability upon a phone call, a bribe, whatever, to press a couple of keys on that computer that was the same size as an automobile sitting on the desk at the Blockbuster Video, hit a couple of keys, and suddenly your balance was zero on your account. So,
one last thing about Blockbuster, yeah. Don't forget, it was $3 for three nights. But then whenever they got real clever and they had, oh, but if it has a red cover instead of a blue cover, it's due back tomorrow night, but it's not any cheaper. So,
right.
You know, that was one of those where every now and then that would catch me. But back to seeing Home Alone at the theater, I did see a theater, and I really, really remember this one. It was one of the most fun times I ever had at the theater because I wasn't dying to see this. I remember when it was coming out, there was like Three Men and a Little Lady were coming out. There's a few other movies kind of around that time, and Predator 2, I believe, was right around the same weekend. So there's a couple others I was wanting to see, but my friend Scott, and he had a foreign exchange student living with him, and he wanted to take him to the movie. So we went and saw Home Alone, and it was packed, packed.
Okay, wait. I have to stop you. Foreign exchange student speaking what language in addition to English?
I don't remember that vividly. I just remember what he looked like.
But it was like Russian,
kind of
German.
Curly
he clearly,
hair. No,
he clearly could not speak English very well, or sort of.
No, he spoke English okay, right. But I think he might have been from Spain or Portugal.
Okay,
but he
keep
had kind
going.
Of curly hair.
So it's Pau Gasol. So Pau Gasol goes to the movies with you and Scott. Continue.
Maybe not quite as tall. But so he's there with us, and like I said, every single seat was taken to where the people that worked there were, you know, asking people to move over, and they left the lights up during the trailers because people were just pouring in. And I had no idea this was going to be a big hit. I thought it was just going to be kind of a funny movie because, you know, all of us knew Macaulay Culkin is the kid from Uncle Buck, you know, and that was really what we knew him from. He wasn't the mega star that he turned into by virtue of this movie yet. So we're in there, and, you know, the movie itself is just really – it's easy to watch. It's a fun watch. And that 15-minute period where he just tortures Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern, I don't think I've ever had that much fun at a movie with, you know, 500 of my closest friends all laughing in unison. And it was just a blast. And the foreign exchange student, literally, he was looking around. He didn't know what the heck was going on. And it was really funny because – he talked about he'd been to the movies before, but he'd never been in a theater that was that big. And he had never been in a, you know, where I guess people in from where he was from are a little more polite and don't just, you know, laugh out loud during the movie like that. I guess, I don't know. It was, you know, once a long time ago, and I'm not remembering all the details, but I do remember how much fun we had and how the kid was like, I want to go see this movie again tomorrow. That was a blast. And so we ended up seeing it 4 or 5 times while it was out. You know, and as I said, it was out for a long, long time.
Really? So you went in the same like week or the same? And I know it was all out for a while. So you went like over several weeks and saw it multiple 3, 4, 5 times?
We did. And I was doing a little research. It was actually out, like we talked about, for a while. It was at the theaters for 29 weeks.
That's incredible.
It opened November of 90. Its final time in the theater was June 21st through 23rd of 91.
Can you imagine?
It still grossed $740,000.
Can you imagine that you are working in May and there are people still coming to see Home Alone in May and you're the person that has to come in and clean the theater up for the 6 people that are still coming in for the weekend showing on a Friday night of Home Alone in May?
There was dollar theaters back then too.
Right,
The digital and on demand and all that's kind of killed the dollar theater. You know, so this could have easily been in the dollar theaters back then. But so kind of going forward, you want to talk about the movie a little bit?
Yeah, I think we can. Although
you want to dive right into this bad boy?
You are much more the expert, though, on this, having seen it that many times in the theater. I mean, I have to confess to you, I remember watching it, I think, once on VHS. I think I have seen it probably in parts about 3 or 4 other times. I did rewatch it some for this show so that we could talk some about it. But you're much bigger on this movie than I am, so let's dive in, because as you're right. I mean, if you talk about an actor, a child actor known for a role, and primarily it's only that role, it's Macaulay Culkin and this role as Kevin in Home Alone, because I don't know how many people would know very much else that he did other than this, and it made him a massive, massive star and made him a whole bunch of money. So go ahead.
And his family. It made his family a bunch of money,
yes,
too. So basically, for those who are unfamiliar with Home Alone, it was released in 1990. It was written and produced by John Hughes, who we know from the teenage movies of the 80s, as well as many others, the Vacation movies. So many movies he was responsible for, the late, great John Hughes, shall say. And of all his movies, this was his highest grossing movie. That tells you anything. It was directed by Chris Columbus, who we know made Jumanji. You know, he's made plenty of movies as well. This was Chris Columbus's highest grossing movie. And kind of at the time where we are doing the show, there was a show on or a movie on Netflix called The Christmas Chronicles. Have you seen anything about that one yet with Kurt Russell?
I have not seen The Christmas Chronicles. No, you got to educate
me. So Kurt Russell played Santa Claus in this movie, and it was made by Chris Columbus. And it was one of those Netflix movies where, you know, Netflix is pretty guarded with their numbers. But they bragged about how well this one did. They said, based on their numbers of people that watched it over Thanksgiving when they released it, it would have made in the neighborhood of $200 million at the theater. Wow. So they were really proud of that. So Chris Columbus still going strong as we're doing this.
Well, what's interesting,
Macaulay, go ahead.
What's interesting about him as the director is the whole story that relates to Christmas Vacation, which we were talking about back a few weeks ago here, a couple of weeks ago now, on we've seen that. That Columbus was supposed to be the director on that one for John Hughes, but he and Chevy Chase basically were ready to go at it in the octagon on pay-per-view, right? And so Columbus was no longer the director, and this was...
Yeah, Columbus went to John Hughes and said, do you have anything else I can do because I can't work with this guy? And Chris Columbus, like I said, he's made some big movies. You know, Adventures in Babysitting, The Home Alones, a couple of the Harry Potter movies are his, Stepmom with Julia Roberts. I mean, this isn't the guy who made these and disappeared. He made Mrs. Doubtfire with Robin Williams. I mean, this, like I said, we're talking about a really big-time director, but he wanted nothing to do with Chevy Chase, and so his kind of his consolation prize was getting Home Alone.
pretty good consolation prize. All right, continue on. Yes, go.
So basically the genesis of the story is the McAllister family is they're going to spend a Christmas in Paris because Peter and Kate, they're the parents. Peter's brother got transferred over to Paris, so Peter's brother is treating the whole family and flying them out to Paris to spend the holidays together. And the night before they're getting ready to leave, the house is – I don't know what it's like at your house around the holidays. My house is certainly nothing as crazy as this. But there, it looks like there's about 15 kids in this house. They're all running around. And you have a gentleman standing in the lobby of the house, kind of the foyer, if you will, dressed up as a police officer. And it's Joe Pesci. And, you know, the funny thing is Joe Pesci in 1990 won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor for Goodfellas. So we have an Oscar winner standing in the house waiting to try and do a little recon because while he's dressed as a cop, what he really is a crook. And he and his partner are kind of staking out this neighborhood so that all these families are going out of town. They know when they're going to go and they can hit the homes while they're gone. And this is kind of the crown jewel, if you will, this three-story mansion in this neighborhood. So they order pizza, which is the pizza guy shows up, 10 pizzas, $12, $120 for pizza. Just no big deal because this family's got plenty of money. And in the meantime, Kevin, who's the character played by Macaulay Culkin, he had wanted a cheese pizza. And his older brother, Buzz, ate the cheese pizza, which just started all hell broke loose.
Of course.
The Pepsi's getting spilled. The milk's getting spilled. If you pay real close attention, Peter, the Kevin's dad, accidentally throws away a plane ticket, which I'm assuming would be Kevin's ticket, you know, and everything going crazy. And and Kate, the mom, takes Kevin upstairs after he just gets berated by everybody. You know, the cousins are like, you're such a disease. Uncle Frank, who he's a character unto himself. You know, he kind of breaks it all down. He says, look what you did, you little jerk. And so Kevin gets taken upstairs, you know, and then he's talking to mom, and the mom's basically getting on him saying, how come you're the only one causing problems? And she tells him to go upstairs, you know, to which the famous line, I am upstairs, dummy. Like, I don't know who talks to their mom that way and gets away with it.
Not in my house.
Apparently that happens in the movies. And so she sends him to the third floor where he's afraid he's going to have to sleep with his cousin Fuller, who's going to wet the bed because he's downstairs drinking Pepsi. And his cousin Fuller is played by Kieran Culkin, his younger brother, who we know from the Fall of the Bride movies.
Right.
So she tells him, he says, I don't want to sleep with Fuller. He's going to wet the bed. And she tells him, fine, we'll put him somewhere else. And he's like, okay. Then he realizes, okay, I've gone too far. He tries to apologize, and she says, I don't want to see you the rest of the night. They have a little bit of weather issues where one of the trees falls and breaks and kind of knocks out the power, the phone lines and everything. So, of course, they oversleep, which causes even more mass chaos. They're all running around the house. They've got one of the kids whose job is to count everybody when they get into, like, the super shuttle type things that are picking them up. And the kid from across the street is over there kind of just being nosy. And so when she counts the heads, she counts the kid from across the street. So they end up leaving, get on the plane, everything. The parents, which my parents would never do this to us, but I guess it happens in this deal, is the parents are sitting up in first class and the kids are in coach.
Oh, yeah.
That's, so it does dawn on them right away that they don't have all of the kids.
That's the classic way. Now, come on. That's the classic way to travel in the holidays if you have the big family and whoever else. Yeah, all of you all get in the back. Mom and I are up front here with the first class treatment, the nice seat, the movie, the meal.
The complimentary champagne.
And you all can be entertained by everybody else. And the flight attendants can deal with you.
Yeah, so Uncle Frank is trying to get his wife to steal the real silver and put it in her purse. You know, in the meantime, Peter and Kate are sitting behind him, and Kate keeps saying, I think we forgot something. It's for whatever reason, I can't figure out what it is. And she's like, did I turn the coffee off? And Peter's like, no, I did. And she's like, did you lock up? And he's like, yes. And then she's like, what about the garage? And he goes, that's it. I forgot to close the garage. And then, you know, he's like, oh, okay. And then it kind of dawns on her about midway through the flight overseas, and you know, right above the Atlantic, that they left Kevin there.
She pops up like out of her sleep.
Yeah, exactly.
And makes the famous scene with the close-up, Kevin! It dawns on her what has happened. And look, I mean, you got to set the movie into motion somehow, some way. The whole theme behind the movie is that they leave him, and they're going to leave him for several days. So, and that's because you're trapped in a foreign country. You got to have the plane land, blah, 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 and then get your way back. So, yes, that's how it
works. And you've got him at home wishing his family. He hates his family so much he doesn't want to see me anymore. So he wakes up while this is going on. He thinks he's made his family disappear. And so he's out there watching Johnny Carson, hanging out in his parents' house, eating all the junk food, watching movies on TV he's not supposed to watch. And then, of course, the highlight is he gets the sled at the top of the stairs and opens the front door
and goes and slides rocketing down the stairs out. Right out.
Exactly.
I only lived, all right, I'm thinking one time in a two-story house. My family moved around some, and my family will probably be listening to this. The only two-story house that we lived in was in Florida, never had snow, and I never did try to sled down the stairs. I don't know about you in two-story homes, if you ever tried sledding down the stairs, especially when you were much younger. I can honestly say I've never tried that.
I've always lived in a two-story house, but I've never lived in a two-story house where the stairs were straight like that. They've always kind of been at a curve where you walk up three steps and then turn right and walk up another 10. So
we had one house when I grew up in middle school and in high school where you could absolutely have gotten to about 15 or 20 miles an hour by the bottom of the stairs if you just took off in the straight line. But I never tried to rocket down out the front door and see how far I could go down the sidewalk, the driveway, and into the yard. No.
My grandparents lived at the bottom of a hill, and, you know, I've grown up here in Fort Worth, so we don't have a lot of snow and ice. Every now and then we'll get ice, which is annoying, but we don't have a lot of snow where you get the sled out. But my grandparents used to take my mom and her siblings going skiing, where when I was a kid, we always went to the beach. So we didn't ever do the skiing thing. I didn't do skiing thing until I lived in Aspen when I got out of high school. So my skiing knowledge and sled knowledge is kind of limited. But we did do one particular winter. I remember it was a cold winter here, and we did the sled where we went down the hill. And basically, they lived on the corner of a hill.
Did the sled have a pull brake of any kind to slow it down, or no, or is that part of the story?
No, it didn't, and it's kind of part of the story. We built like a little snow thing for us to crash into. And all of us did it a couple of times. And the hard part was getting to the top of the hill. You know what I mean? So,
always.
So it wasn't nearly as much fun as it sounded. But that's probably the closest I've done to this. So anyways, back to the movie. He's at home by himself. He's living it up. He's watching Johnny Carson. He's gone to the store to get himself a toothbrush and made sure it was approved by the American Dental Association and all that. You know, he's kind of looking around the house. And it kind of starts to dawn on him that he's maybe missed his family a little bit. But at the same time, he thinks they've disappeared. He didn't think they're coming back. So, you know, so he gets out. He goes to the store. He's buying fabric softener and everything. And in the meantime, you know, he was at the house the night when the quote-unquote police officer came to visit to make sure that they had, you know, their automatic timers and see when they were going to be in town and everything. So when he went to go get his toothbrush, he saw one of their neighbors. In fact, actually accidentally left a small part out, which is a major part of the movie.
Well, yeah, but the neighbor is going to become a big deal throughout not only the movie, but the ending of the movie. So tell me more about who this neighbor is.
At the very beginning, when all the family's there, before he got thrown up to the third floor, he's in his older brother room, Buzz. He's in Buzz's room, and they're looking outside at their neighbor named Old Man Marley, who walks around with a trash can with salt in it and a big snow shovel. And every day he's alone. He didn't have any family or anything. And every day he goes out and salts the sidewalks. And his brother's telling the story about how back in the 50s, he murdered his whole family. There just wasn't enough evidence for it. And everybody knows he did. It's only a matter of time till he does it again. And right when he says that, Old Man Mario looks up and they all jump back and close the shades and everything. And so you've got in your mind that you know, Old Man Marley's a scary dude. So Kevin is at the pharmacy trying to get a toothbrush, and he's trying to find out if it's approved by the American Dental Association, which, of course, is open. Nobody works there. Like, I don't know. In the meantime, Old Man Marley comes in the store, and he's scared to death of Old Man Marley. So he takes off running, And the guy at the pharmacy sees a police officer and says, "Stop, thief." So this cop is chasing him through one of those basically ice skating rinks where he slides through a guy's legs and gets away from the cop. But, you know, this is a kid who's been, you know, brought up by some decent parents. So he's like really mad at himself because he's like, "Now I'm a criminal." And he's just walking down the sidewalk with his head down. And it's right about the same time that Harry and Marv, who's played by Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern, who are the crooks, they are leaving one of the places they've just hit. And as they're leaving, Kevin walks right in front of their van because he's just kind of in a zone and they almost run him over.
Right.
You know? And that's one of the funniest parts of the whole movie where he's like, ah,
little foreshadowing where we kind of introduce them at that point to Culkin's Kevin character. And that's going to set the rest of the movie into motion because now it's a battle.
Yeah, what sets it in motion is he looks up because he's walking past him and Joe Pesci rolls the window down. And he says, "Hey, you ought to watch where you're going." He looks up at him and he sees he's got a gold tooth.
Right, the gold tooth.
So he recognizes him from seeing him at his house that night when he was dressed as a police officer. So Joe Pesci catches on, "Hey, I don't like the way that kid looked at me." He's like, and so they're kind of tailing Kevin a little bit. And Kevin's starts walking a little faster. They start driving a little faster. And he takes off and goes and hides like in a nativity scene in front of the church.
Right.
And they take off. Of course, go ahead.
And of course, they're saying, "I'm not going to go in there. I'm not going to go into
church."
Because they're the criminals. But this is what's going to set the whole dynamic of those two against Kevin for the rest of the movie, is that part of the movie where they almost run him over with the car in the first place while he's trying to get his toothbrush. All he did was walk and be responsible like little kids should and brush his teeth. And it almost gets him run over.
Yeah. The funny thing is, and he was... he was so mad himself because he thought, "Well, I'm a criminal now." You know, he almost got run over. And so, yeah, so that kind of sets it up. And so in the meantime, we see that obviously they're breaking these other houses. And Marv, played by Daniel Stern, he keeps putting stuff in a rag into the sinks and leaving the water running because he wants, you know, every famous criminal duo's got like a mantra, and theirs is going to be they're the Wet Bandits. And so he leaves the water running and every house they've robbed.
Like a calling card. Yes.
Exactly.
This is us.
It's their calling card. And so in the meantime, Kevin sees them. They're at his house. And so he's watching the movie Angels with Dirty Faces, which they specifically made for this movie. It's not an old movie, by the way. It was specifically filmed for this movie.
Now, this is why I love Jay Betzel on We've Seen That. And by the way, you need to be locked in on our social media. We've Seen That on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram for all of this, because you find out all these different factoids. I was at some point going to ask you about that gangster movie that's on his TV all the time. And you already know the answer that it's not even a real movie. It's something that they made up for this.
Right, they made it up for this. And then, you know, there's also the sequel to Angels with Dirty Faces is in Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. So so in this one, he hears them outside.
Yes, it's a mob movie where the mobsters are trying to kill each other and machine guns, and it's all completely made up. I love it. Keep going.
So he hears them outside and kind of just jumps into motion where he puts, like, firecrackers in a crock pot and puts it right next to the door where the dog entrance is, and Daniel Stern standing outside the door, and he turns the TV up real loud, and Daniel Stern, like a complete moron, thinks these two gangsters are arguing and shooting at each other in the middle of suburban Chicago, and he takes off and he's telling Joe Pesci about what's going on in there, and Joe Pesci says, "Well, maybe we should hang around and see who comes out of the house in case the cops fingers for a job and want to ask us about a murder in the area." And so they sit there and then they see that it's just Kevin. He's there and they figure out that he's there and he's home alone. And in the meantime, you know, they've come by the house and he kind of tricks them into thinking people are there. There's one night where he puts a Michael Jordan cardboard stand up on top of a train.
I got to tell you that story. So he's got the dummies in the window because he's trying to make it look like there's people there, a house party or whatever, and he's using a pulley system. And again, Kevin is not only the most clever 8-year-old you've ever seen, Macaulay Culkin, in this movie, but he's also got tremendous ability to artistically design things on his own and then create the pulley system with all the ropes. And we never see a ladder or him on the ladder creating all of these things where he can pull the ropes and make all of all this happen. So very Hollywood-esque on how it would happen, but it's a make-believe in any regard. But anyway, when he's doing
Are you saying
that,
this couldn't really happen?
I'm saying for an 8-year-old to be able to do all the pulleys and all the different stuff, I mean, it's crazy. It's one thing if he had set the mannequins up, for example, and just had them sitting there, but he actually has this rope and has a pulley system through all these other loops in and around the walls and stuff where he's moving the mannequins to make it look like they're walking around in the living room. So when he pulls the Michael Jordan cardboard cutout in the white Chicago Bulls, now keep in mind when the movie came out here is around the time the Bulls were at their height. Jordan and the Bulls end up winning the NBA championship 3 times in a row in the early 1990s. They later go on to win 6 times. So those Michael Jordan commercials, the Jordan sneakers, everything is at the height. And I got a fun one for you. My wife, Mrs. Reeves, she was into Michael Jordan. This is in and around the time we met and we were dating right after this movie was made. She had the white Chicago Bulls Michael Jordan cardboard cutout just like it is in the movie. I don't know how she, I never asked her to this moment. We're now 28 years later at the time that we're taping this in 2018. I don't know how she got that cardboard cutout, but she had it. I don't know where she absconded it from, but she had it. She had it in her room at one point. She also had it in her classroom for many years when she was teaching elementary school. So when I go back and see Home Alone and I see the Michael Jordan cardboard cutout, I'm reminiscing about the early days of me meeting and dating Mrs. Reeves. How about that, Jay Betzel, for the cardboard
That's
cutout?
That's pretty cool. Yeah, and so, you know, he put Michael Jordan on the train. So the train is going around in circles. So there's a really tall basketball player walking around the room in circles. He's got another one that's on top of the record player. So it's going around in circles. Right. I mean, and I'm with you. Yeah, this is the most clever kid ever. I wouldn't come up with any of this stuff. But so, you know, he basically just toys with these criminals, you know, and in the meantime, they've robbed, you know, the other 4 or 5 houses in the neighborhood they wanted, and they've got it set. You know, that they're going to come to his house, even knowing that he's going to be there because they know he's all by himself, you know, and they know kids are afraid. And in the meantime, Kevin actually stops by church because now he's starting to miss his family. Right. And he's thinking, I need to go to church. So he goes to church. He's sitting there. And in the meantime, an old man Marley walks in. He looks up and he's, you know, his eyes get real big. And old man Marley says, you mind if I sit down? And so he's like, sure. And so they're sitting there talking, having a little conversation, kind of like man-to-man, if you will, where old man Marley's telling him that he's only there because he wants to see his granddaughter practice because he's not welcome to go and see her that night. And Kevin's like, you're not welcome at church? He's like, no, you're always welcome in church. I'm just not welcome with my son. And goes through the story about how before Kevin's family moved on the block, him and his son got into a big heated argument, and they both said they never cared to speak to one another again, so they hadn't. And Kevin says, he's like, yeah, I talked to him, at least for your granddaughter, because I'm sure she misses the presence, you know, which is exactly what some 8-year-old kid would say. But in the meantime, you know, they kind of have a little bonding, if you will.
Of course.
And you know, and so they shake hands and Kevin takes off and he hears the clock ticking, and he'd heard him when they were at his house earlier saying that they were gonna
come
stop
back
and grab a bite to eat and come back at 9 o'clock.
It's typical criminals. They're outside, master criminals. They're outside discussing that they're going to go to dinner and come back around 9 o'clock. And Kevin has heard them talking about that. And so he knows I've got to be back at the house because they're coming in the house.
And I mentioned earlier about Joe Pesci winning the Oscar for playing Tommy in Goodfellas that same year. You know, the year before he had been in Lethal Weapon 2, where he played Leo Getz.
There you go.
His character, Harry in Home Alone is much more akin to Leo Getz than he is to Tommy from Goodfellas.
Well, and remember,
he's not the greatest.
The reason you remember his name is because whatever you need, Leo Getz in Lethal Weapon 2, and of course much more well known at the same time for Goodfellas in that role, but then in the comedic role here, they're the bumbling criminals, and we've been pointing to this for the whole movie. We're eventually going to have a showdown where they're going to come to rob the house, and Macaulay Culkin's got to hold them off here at this point.
When Macaulay Culkin, when he gets home, you know, he closes the door, he locks, he deadbolts and everything, and he's like, this is my house. I must defend it. You know, and it's just so cool. And you see him, he unrolls this piece of paper, which if you pause it, it shows everything he's got set up that he's going to do to him. And like at the beginning of the movie, when he's in his parents' room complaining about how Uncle Frank won't let him watch a movie, his dad tells him, if you're bored, you can go pick up all those micro machines, you know, because somebody's going to fall and break their neck. And so he gets all the micro machines out. He's got the paint can set up. He's got, you know, everything, you name it, set. And it's just, it is 15 minutes. And it's the type of humor I would kind of refer to, TJ, is kind of like Three Stooges style.
Yes.
Because these guys would have been dead probably 10 times over for the stuff he did to them. They at least would have been in the hospital. They
especially dropping an iron from two stories up onto Daniel Stern's head, or the blowtorch as Joe Pesci's coming in the door that burns the top of his scalp. And
they
makes
both
him
fall on the stairs, you know, when he wets the stairs down and it's freezing. So they go run up the stairs and they're on ice, and so they just bust their ass. You know, I mean, it's like there's no way that they wouldn't just give up and leave, but it becomes an obsession. You can kind of tell from Harry talking about this house that this is the reason we're in this neighborhood, is this house. And then just, they're not going to be pushed around by this kid, you know, and he basically, let's see what all do we go through. He gets him with a blowtorch.
Right.
He has Joe Pesci runs into the sticky saran wrap stuff and then gets shot by a bunch of feathers.
Marv says, you look like a fried chicken there at the end.
He goes, why'd you take your shoes off? He's like, well, the hell did you dress like a chicken?
Exactly.
But Marv goes downstairs. He's going to go through the basement while Harry's going to go to the front. And Marv falls down the stairs. His crowbar lands on his head. You know, he ends up getting through there, and there's like all this tar that he's painted on the stairs. So he has to take his shoes off, then he has to take his socks off, and he steps on a nail. You know what I mean? And just stuff that's just painful. And to me, one of the funniest of all was when Kevin's got him upstairs. He's already hit him with the paint cans. They've already fallen on the micro machines that he had laid out for him. And Joe Pesci trips over the tripwire. Daniel Stern jumps it and grabs Kevin's leg. So he's got a hold of him. He's like, Harry, I've got him. And right in front of him is the tarantula that was in Buzz's room that was safely in the container before Kevin destroyed the room trying to climb up to the top to get Buzz's money to go shopping. So this tarantula's been all over the house this whole movie, and they've been teasing it. So you know something's going to happen with it. And so Kevin reaches out, grabs it, and puts it on Marv's face, to which we get like the most just blood-curdling just scream. You know, it's like a scream that belongs in a Friday the 13th movie or something. And you know, jumps off of him and lands on Joe Pesci's chest, to which Marv tries to hit him. And, of course, the tarantula moves right before he hits him. And so he just slams, you know, the crowbar and all his force right into Joe Pesci's chest, which, of course, while they're doing this and you know, yelling at each other, Kevin has run upstairs, and this little concoction he's done where he gets on a the rope and slides over into his treehouse.
Right.
Pick it up from there.
Okay. So first of all, the master criminals again, using a crowbar to try to hit the spiders, which is interesting. And then of course, you know, Pesci's trying to swing back. In this instance, Harry's trying to hit Marv with the crowbar. And then it ends up that Culkin takes the bicycle handlebars and goes on the guide wire across to the treehouse. Very reminiscent of another movie, by the way, with the escape. It's kind of inadvertently, indirectly linked to the movie Tango and Cash, which you and I like. Haven't we? We've been debating that we will or won't do Kurt Russell, who you mentioned earlier, and Sylvester Stallone in Tango and Cash. But that movie was around the same time, right? 90, 91, 92, something like that.
It was 89. 89. It was about a year before.
Okay, so maybe somebody in the stunt world got an idea of, hey, let's mimic the Tango and Cash escape scene from the prison where they take their prison belts off at night in the rain, throw them over the electrical guide wires with the rock music, the dramatic music playing, and have to escape from the prison by sliding down the guide wire. Well, instead, Macaulay Culkin's going to escape from the top of the house with the handlebars of the bike and slide on over to the treehouse, and then that's his escape. And, of course, Harry and Marv are going to try to follow him, and that doesn't work out so well for them as they try to follow him.
Well, and a funny thing is, he tells him, he's like, he says, guys, I'm going to call the cops. And they're thinking about running back down through the house, but because Marv doesn't want to get on the wire because he's afraid of heights. And Harry's like, let's go get him. He's like, no, he's calling the cops. He's like, from a treehouse, he's not calling the cops. You know, so they get on the rope, and Kevin, you know, cleverly waits for him to get about halfway out, and before he pulls out, you know, the big clippers and cuts the rope, to which just slings them, you know, up against the side of the house and into the brick wall. And they're both just laying there. And, you know, and like I said, and obviously this movie is, like we said, pure fantasy and pure fun. But this is where I kind of get the idea of the Three Stooges thing, because there's no way they're getting up from most of this. But they end up getting up, and he has, in the meantime, has called the police, Kevin has, from inside his house and said, my house is being robbed, gave him the address of his neighbor and said, my name's Murphy. So he goes over to the Murphys trying to lead the criminals over there so that they'll be there when the police show up. You know, like I said, this is like the most resourceful 8-year-old of
exactly.
all time.
Exactly. Yes.
In the meantime, he goes into the basement of that house and it's, of course, underwater. It's flooding because Marvin and Harry have already robbed and they left the water running. So he runs up the top of the stairs, opens the door, and they have outsmarted him. They walk through the front door of that house and they're waiting on him. So they pick him up, they hang him on a little hook on the back of the door, and they're talking about what they're going to do to him, how they're going to smash his face with an iron or set him on fire with a blowtorch. And first Joe Pesci says he's going to eat his fingers one by one. And right then, old man Marley shows up, and the man who is rumored to be a serial killer turns out to be the hero. And he's got his snow shovel, and he pounds Daniel Stern in the face, which knocks him down. Joe Pesci turns around. He gives him a clobber. So they're both down, and he picks Kevin up, and he says, let's get you home. So the two of them are kind of in cahoots on this, right? Nobody else really knows about all. So while Kevin's back home, looking out the window, watching all the police show up and dragging them out, and the cops even say, nice job leaving the water running. Now we know each and every home that you've hit.
Exactly.
And Kevin's waving at him, just taunting him. You know, he's really messed with them pretty much since he met him.
Yeah, no doubt. So, and then, of course, the parents are trying to get back home, and they kind of go through, and we've already done a Planes, Trains, and Automobiles here, and we've seen that. They're doing their own version of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and end up in the back of what, like a rental truck trying to get back to...
Well, the mom decided to stay at the airport and try and get on standby, and so she ended up getting back to the U.S., but due to the time of year it is and the weather conditions, everything, she couldn't get a plane. So she ends up in the back of a bus with Gus Polinski, Polka, Polka, Polka,
right,
big hit they
right.
sold in Sheboygan.
Who is?
John Candy,
who we love the John Candy cameo there. As you mentioned earlier, Uncle Buck, and he's the huge comedian in and around this time, and he does the Polka, Polka, Polka. I love it, yes.
And the rest of the family stayed in Paris for the day and took the flight the next morning. And so anyways, they essentially get back to the house at the same time because, Kevin wakes up, it's Christmas morning, and he's disappointed to see that his request from Santa, because, he'd gone down to talk to Santa and said, I don't care about any gifts, I just want my family back. And he's like, and I know you're not the real Santa, but I do know you work for him, so can you tell him that I said this? So he's disappointed to see that Santa didn't come. The milk and cookies are sitting there, nobody's touched them. His family's not there. And then, as he kind of is, he's kind of docile, if you will. His head kind of drops, and then he hears his mom come in, calling his name out. And the funny part is while they were in Paris, the family was talking about how Kevin is so little and he can't do anything on his own. And, the whole time he's been sitting there taking care of the house. And so while she's talking to him and saying how sorry she is that everything happened, and of course, he's just happy to see his mom. So rather, he tries to throw the guilt trip at first, but then he runs and starts smiling and gives her a big hug. And she says something about everybody else wanted to come, but right when she's saying that, everybody else shows up.
And so then we have the big family reunion there and the fun of Christmas and all of that comes back out. And Kevin is the hero and has great stories to tell about how he was able to fend everybody off.
Kevin doesn't tell anybody. They said, what'd you do? He said, I just hung around
exactly,
the house.
Exactly. But at some point he's 8. He's going to have to let it go. I mean, I've got at this time 10-year-olds in my house, and they can't keep anything that they've done to themselves for more than about 15 minutes, much less a few hours. So he's going to eventually have to tell them.
I don't know, because he's a little different than the other 8-year-old we ever know, because he cleaned the house up, everything except for Buzz's room, because he's over there. He looks out the window, and you see that not only is like the coolest Kev ever, but he's a hero. Because he kind of sees old man Marley reuniting with his son and his family. And that's all because Kevin put him up to it. So, he sees him, he waves at him, everything. And right when you think it's going to just be the happiest, sappy ending, you hear Buzz just scream out, Kevin, what did you do to my room?
Exactly.
And then Kevin runs off and the closing credits come.
I love it, and it would set into motion, obviously, that there would be a sequel to this because of how well it did. All right, so what do we have here now that we've been through all of this? We mentioned some of the actors that are in it. What other fun facts do we have about Home Alone, the 1990 Christmas hit?
Well, let's see. Let's kind of go through our list. One of the fun ones that stood out to me is that Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern felt indifferent about the movie's potential during shooting, so they intentionally gave these over-the-top performances, so there's neither one of them believing that the movie would be any kind of success. So that's kind of funny. We've got Joe Pesci, who, of course, fresh off being in Goodfellas, a Scorsese, he kept forgetting when he was in character that this was a family movie. So Chris Columbus advised him to say fridge instead of the F word. How about that?
Yeah, and if you notice, I mean, there's a couple of different times where, you know, you're trying to watch this now with your kids and they have to sanitize it, where he says, "I'm going to rip your cojones off," which is, you know, like right out of Goodfellas that you would say it the other way. With that, it's not exactly something in a family movie that you would necessarily hear. But yeah, it's just funny. They're the bumbling guys. Now, was this for, I haven't looked at this on the IMDb or whatever while we're doing the show. Was this before City Slickers for Daniel Stern as Marv, right before it, or right around the same time?
This was before. City Slickers was 91.
So there you go. So yes, those two, Pesci had already had some success. Stern was going to have some success there with City Slickers and a couple of other things, but yeah.
Stern had been in Breaking Away back in 1979 with Dennis Quaid, Dennis Christopher.
Oh, phenomenal.
The movie where the Cutters. Great.
That might have to be a, we've seen that somewhere down the road, even though it was like late 70s, it would still be in our kind of time period.
The beauty of it is, since it's our show, we can do whatever we want.
That's right.
We can make a 79 or a 2005.
Stern and Quaid, and isn't it Jackie Earl Haley is also with them too?
Correct. That's Paul Dooley is the dad who played the dad in 16
yes.
Candles.
And so,
good
movie. Tremendous movie about how they're trying to
Don't
figure out life.
Don't forget, Hart Bochner is one of the guys that is one of the jocks from the school, and he is in Die Hard.
How about the
plays Ellis?
We love that. All right, so we got to go back to that. But anyway, Stern as Marv, Pesci as Harry. They're the villains, the quote unquote villains, if you want here. All right, what other fun facts? I didn't mean to sidetrack you. You mentioned about John Hughes with this one. What about the setting to this one with Winnetka, Illinois? Right.
Yeah, tell me about Winnetka.
So Winnetka, because you know you've got all these different Hughes movies that are all in the suburbs of Chicago, and some of the towns he makes up, like in The Breakfast Club that we've done on, we've seen that. That's a made-up town, Shermer High School, Shermer, Illinois. Winnetka actually exists in the Chicagoland, population 12,500 at the last census, at the latest check. So Winnetka actually does exist in Illinois, as Hughes, the late John Hughes, put it in for the movie. I got you on that one. There we go.
And this movie was shot in a three-story single-family house at 671 Lincoln Avenue in the village of Winnetka.
How about that? So on location. So unlike Christmas Vacation, when you ruined my experience and my feelings for the movie, when you told me that those are not real houses, that they're actually on the lot at the Warner Brothers studio or whichever studio it was, this is actually a real house in Home Alone that they shot in and utilized.
It's not the house that Todd and Margo lived in that was also the Murtaugh's house. You are correct. Here's a fun one. So what we mentioned when we were doing the box office, that Home Alone was released by Fox, and it was originally a Warner Brothers property. The budget was $14 million. They wanted to increase the budget to $18 million, and Warner Brothers said, "No way, Jose."
Uh-huh.
So Fox picked it up, and it would go on to gross $476 million worldwide.
Let me think about this for a second. I'm thinking that maybe the Warner Brothers executive that passed on increasing the budget and allowed Fox to go make, $325 million more on this movie wasn't working for Warner Brothers much longer past 1990. It's just a hunch that I have. We'd have to do some research.
I can't imagine that they would.
There's mistakes, Jay Betzel, and then there's $300 million mistakes over the course of a few
let's
months.
Let's go ahead and to put this in the colossal mistake that was. Home Alone became the highest grossing live action comedy film of all time in the United States. And it held the record from 1990 until it was overtaken in 2011 by, do you want to guess?
2011. Would that be like the Hangover movies?
The Hangover 2.
Oh, the Hangover 2. And that's a complete, I do not have that in front of me on the internet, but I just took a guess with how successful those were. But keep in mind, those are adult comedy films with the slapstick and the language and whatever. This is more of a kid's kind of family fun spoof thing, but that's great that it lasted almost, 25, right at 25 years, that it was the number one action comedy funny holiday movie. And look, it's still on all the time in and around Christmas time and holiday time, and reruns on basic cable and that kind of stuff, and you can find it everywhere. So it still works. It made Macaulay Culkin famous for a long, long time as a child actor, for sure. He was the biggest of deals.
Yeah, we, and you'd mentioned, yeah, everybody thinks of Macaulay Culkin from this one, but don't forget, remember he was in The Good Son where he was bad news. Remember that
right,
one?
Right.
He was bad news.
And you had My Girl as well, which had the twist of the child dying in it, that it caused so much controversy. Well, but and he did Richie Rich.
My Girl had what? Anna Chlumsky,
right.
Dan Aykroyd, Jamie Lee Curtis. It was funny because it was a small, fun little movie. It was well made. It was entertaining. But they marketed the hell out of it. Mac is back, you know.
Right.
They rode that Home Alone train to where, you know, my girl made some money, and it probably wouldn't have made any money had they not played that off.
Right.
But yeah, with Macaulay Culkin's character getting stung by a bee and dying. That was probably one that a lot of parents were probably like, why did I bring my kids to
there
this?
There was a lot of outrage.
Explaining this to them?
Yes, I still remember a lot of the outrage in and around that twist that nobody was warned about. And yes, but I mean, he did Richie Rich right after that as well. But he's always going to be known as Kevin in Home Alone as a child actor. And really, as he progresses on now into adulthood, and he's been married since then, and here we go again with how old we are. He really, I don't want to say can't escape. I don't know that he wants to escape. He's always going to be Kevin from Home Alone from that movie. That's what he's known for. And sometimes child actors, that's the way that it is. They're known that way forever. It is no different than Peter Billingsley with another movie, A Christmas Story at Holiday Time. He's always Ralphie. You'll shoot your eye out, kid, with the BB gun forever. No matter what else he does, he's Ralphie from that movie. So same thing there with Macaulay Culkin.
And movie fans will know the kid from the toy is not the kid from the toy anymore. People that follow the movies will get that little inside joke, and they'll totally know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
So let's see what else we've got that's kind of fun from Home Alone. Here's kind of an interesting one. Because of child labor laws, Macaulay Culkin was only allowed to work on set 5 hours a day. So they had to plan all his scenes around that schedule, and that's why he's on camera alone a lot.
Well, because remember –
They could do the other guys whenever.
Remember, yeah, they had standards back in those days. Now they don't have the child labor, I'm sure, and they can work 17 hours a day if they need to, because everybody wants to make their money off their little kids and try to do it that way. Yes, exactly.
Here's his John Candy's role, Gus Polanski, the clarinet player in the polka band. He did the role for free.
How about that? As a thank you, I guess, to John Hughes for some of the other movies you mentioned, Uncle
Buck.
He only worked
on the movie for one day. Says the character was inspired by real-life Jan Polka King Lewin, who lived in Pennsylvania, and his polka bands really did do tours around the world. John Candy improvised every one of his lines.
I'm wondering, if that's somebody that struck John Hughes at some point and he wanted to create that character in and around that, or if he just wrote it in for John Candy to be able to play the part. But that's pretty cool. All right, what else? What else here on Home Alone? Do we need to know?
The police station that she called, remember they kept going hyper on too and switching the phones back? The police station is actually a high school office.
Kind of like we talked about with the Breakfast Club, where they turned the gymnasium into the library for two stories. Sometimes you got to do what you got to do to make a police station.
Says the role of Santa Claus, where we mentioned that Kevin went and found Santa Claus and asked for his family back. The late Chris Farley auditioned for the role and did not get it. Because before he rose to fame on Saturday Night Live.
How about that? All right. So good to know. Good to know.
Little Nero's Pizza. With Little Nero's, the guy that always shows up at the house sliding into the driveway on the ice and crashing into the statue. It is actually a parody of Little Caesars, because Caesar and Nero are both famous names from Roman history.
And, of course, the rivalry of Chicago and Detroit, because Little Caesars synonymous with Detroit and all the rivalries with all the sports teams, et cetera, et cetera.
So we have John Williams did the score for the film, and his song Somewhere in My Memory is used mainly for the soundtrack of the first two Home Alone films, but he also did a couple different recordings of the song itself, and there was a musical version that Bette Midler sings. That's kind of cool.
How about that? Okay, and so you should know that at the time that we're talking about this, and this has actually been going on for a few years, they reprised this movie in and around the holiday time, and with different orchestras all over the country, they actually show the movie and the orchestra will play the music, Jay Betzel. And at the time that we're taping this is actually going to go on the week that we're taping it in Tampa, where I live, but all over the country, New York, Pittsburgh, San Francisco, in the month of December, there are orchestras that are doing the same thing. I didn't know until I started doing a little research in and around Home and Alone, and I saw the ads that it was that big a deal for the music from this movie for orchestras to be able to play live. So in other words, you're watching the movie as it's going along, and at the exact moments where there's no dialogue and it's music, it is a live orchestra in the theater with you that's playing the actual music right on cue. How about that? All over the country.
That's pretty sweet.
So that's actually going on.
That sounds kind of fun.
So, yeah, I mean, that's a definite different way to enjoy the movie and a great way to hook people back into Home Alone. And, again, it's going on all over the country. So you may be hearing us this week and hear something about that. And I'm sure they'll bring it back a year from now in December. And it's going on all through December. Multiple dates in multiple different cities. It's one night in Tampa where I am. I think you said that you heard something about it being in at least Texas, if not in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. But I did see New York and Pittsburgh and San Francisco. They're all doing it.
Very interesting. That if I see that around here, that might be something worth venturing out to on this holiday season. So also, we've got a cool one. Danny DeVito was originally considered for the role of Harry, played by Joe Pesci, which I'm gonna say this, I think this movie was perfectly cast. I wouldn't have changed anybody. You know, I think of all these people as these characters, so I'm glad Joe Pesci played that part. We also have the late William Goldman, the really well-known screenwriter. He, according to William Goldman, the film's success prompted the creation of a Hollywood verb known as to be home aloned, meaning to have a film's box office revenue reduced by the impact of Home Alone. Talking about a lot of the movies that came out in November and December of 1990. You know, you had like The Godfather Part 3, you had Dances with Wolves, you had movies that did well, but none of them were ever number one because Home Alone was number one for like 10 weeks. So Home Alone would... which they made for $18 million up against all these big budget blockbusters, and it beat them all.
So in other words,
to be home alone is a verb.
To be home alone. So in other words, when the Green Bay Packers were always coming from behind and winning games with Brett Favre, they would say in the NFL, you got farved. So it's the same thing, because that means you got beat in the last 2 minutes by Brett Favre and the Packers. Same thing now for home alone. You got home alone if you were in and around that same time frame.
Very, very much so. So the trailer... For Home Alone features deleted and alternate scenes. It says a TV anchorman warns viewers to be on the lookout for the wet bandits. In the supermarket scene, the manager of the supermarket stands behind the checkout girl and asks Kevin the questions checkout girl asked him in the theatrical cut. And there's an additional dialogue between Harry and Marv just before they go to Kevin's house, which Marv says, "Kids are stupid. I know I was," to which Harry replies, "You're still stupid, Marv." that was not in the movie. And you mentioned the checkout girl. Remember, she's like, "Where's your mom?" Down in the car. "Where's your dad?" "He's at work." "Where do you live?" "I can't tell you." "Why not?" "Because you're a stranger."
Yeah.
You know, that whole part, which was pretty, he just put her in her place. I don't even know what she would say to that. Well, so we've got, let's kind of go through our little trivia thing and see if we've got any more fun things that we can throw out before we wrap this bad boy up. Here it is. The fake movie Angels with Filthy Souls was the first thing to be filmed when the film's budget wasn't very big. So everyone, like starting out, looked like they were on cardboard sets. So that's what that was.
That's tremendous. That the gangster movie, again, worth repeating, is not a gangster movie. Don't go looking for it. It's only created there in Home Alone. I love it.
Right. And you mentioned we mentioned earlier about Home Alone 2, how they have the sequel to that movie. And are you a fan of Home Alone 2? The
now,
Lost in New York?
I can honestly say I've only seen part of it and haven't seen it all the way through. Give me like the 60-second synopsis, because they made another one because everybody's got to cash in. We've talked about this before when we did Rocky IV, that if you've done something very successful, the vacation series, whatever it is, they always want another one or a third one or a fourth one, and they wanted this, no doubt, with Home Alone.
Yeah, and the funny part about Home Alone 2 is they're not even like bashful about it. They essentially just remade the first one. And it was so, you know, it was just as popular. When it opened number one. It beat like Bram Stoker's Dracula, Malcolm X, and Aladdin. It opened ahead of Aladdin, which was huge. Remember the cartoon from Disney that had Robin Williams?
So yes,
it was a big deal. And basically, it was essentially the same story where he actually made it to the airport with everybody, but he ends up getting on the wrong plane. And I believe they're all going to Florida. He goes to New York and ends up staying in the Plaza Hotel. And it's a fun movie. It's the same as the first one, to where it gives you the goods. You know, if you go to this, how many times have we gone to see a sequel and you're like, man, I wish it was more like the first one. I didn't really like the way that went.
Or even,
you know,
worse.
If you like the first one, you're going to like the
second.
Or
even worse, like Caddyshack 2 should have never been made. I'm going to keep throwing that out there as many times as we can. And we've seen that. They should have never, ever gone to the sequel on that one. So, yeah, I mean – It actually works. It's funny. It's got good point. It's got good parts in it.
When one we just mentioned, I was actually really disappointed when I saw The Hangover 2 in the theater because I'm like, it's the same movie. It's just in Bangkok instead of Vegas.
Right.
You know, so I mean, I guess it just kind of shows our age because when I was a kid, I loved Home Alone 2. I was like, this is perfect. Exactly what I wanted.
And by the way,
we mentioned, I believe there's three or four of them, but these are the only two that have
Macaulay Culkin. Right. Family. The third one I was going to say has been on in my house recently at the time we're talking. My 10-year-olds were watching it much more so than I was with my wife, and it's totally different actors. And oh, by the way, the sister is Scarlett Johansson in it from back 20 plus years ago before she became big time star. So yeah, and then they even did a fourth version of Home Alone, and again there were different actors in that one as well.
Yeah, and I never saw three or four. I think four was called Taken Back to the House, and it was like a made for TV movie. It's just, you know, kind of one of those things where we're going to ride this as long as we can, but you know, the McAllisters, they weren't a part of the rest of them, so it's not anything that I would say you got to rush out and watch unless you just say you're snowed in and you've already watched Home Alone 1 and 2 and you want to see what else is going on. But so let's kind of move on. We've got, we usually kind of wrap the show up. We'll talk about what the critics said when the movie was actually out of the theaters. So when this one came out back in 1990, Variety praised the film. They loved its cast, which we've talked about a couple of times. We really liked the cast. The Washington Post, Gene Cooper, praised it for its comedic approach, while Hal Henson praised Chris Columbus's direction and Macaulay Culkin's acting. The New York Times complained that the first half is flat and unsurprising, as the cute little title suggests, but then they praised the second half for its slapstick humor, which the second half, of course, is the Three Stooges-style violence that we were talking about earlier, which sure. Is just, if you have the chance to go see this in a theater that's crowded, it's worth the price of admission. We've talked about, you know, there's a lot of movie theaters around here that'll do these retro movie showings, and they'll do them like on a Tuesday or Wednesday night when, you know, you're just showing a generic movie, you might get 15, 20 people. But if you kind of make it an event and you bring in, you know, you have an old movie that all these people like those that listen to our podcast, you know, that like nostalgia and kind of long for these days, and they'll show these movies. So if you see that Home Alone's playing at theater, I would highly recommend jumping out to go see it if you didn't see it in the theater before, because that little 15-minute run where he tortures them is just so much fun. So lastly, on the critics, we've got Roger Ebert. He gave it 2.5 out of 4 stars, but Siskel and Ebert gave it 2 thumbs up.
So, and look, I often say this whenever you're doing that, America approved astoundingly of this movie, regardless of what the critics thought about it. And that's the reason why I oftentimes don't even pay attention to critics, because as you mentioned, it was number one for how many weeks and in the theater for how many weeks, as it turns out?
It was in the theater for 29 weeks. It was number one for a while.
For at least about 2 months straight,
it was number one.
It did that well in the holidays. So Home Alone will be on your TV at some point in and around Christmas time or shortly thereafter, and you'll have to watch it. And of course, again, you watch Macaulay Culkin struggle later on in life. Is he going to be an actor? He had a band. He's been married. He's now divorced. The scary thing is he's approaching like mid-30s, early 40s. It's hard to believe. The child actors do get older, but he is always going to be known for this role.
And, you know, he was a long-term in a relationship with the great Mila Kunis, who pretty much every guy I know loves.
Right.
She is awesome. She, I believe, is married to Ashton Kutcher now. Is that sound right?
Yes, they were together for
a few years. Not always up on my gossip.
I think they were together for a few years, like in the early 2000s, before she was a bigger star, and now she's been with Ashton Kutcher
Forgetting Sarah Marshall in that 70s show.
So she's been with Ashton Kutcher now, but, you know, 3 or 4 years, nothing ever lasts in Hollywood. This much we know.
I don't know. I have a feeling this one might. I'm going to go with a happy feeling, positive feeling, since we're in the holidays. One thing I wanted to mention, you brought up earlier about Christmas Story. You know, everybody knows that you can kind of set your clock around a Christmas Story being on around Christmas. Is it TBS or TNT? What's the channel
that shows it? It's one or both of them that show it 24 straight hours around Christmas, but they start revving it up and showing it a few days before, occasionally at night, just to get you cranked up. And yes, you will shoot your eye out, kid.
When, you know, when I was a kid, we had It's a Wonderful Life that would come on all the time, the Jimmy Stewart classic Frank Capra made. And this one, it seemed like this one was primed and ready to be one of those, because it says from 1993 to 1996 and then again in 1998, NBC aired this movie during the 8 p.m. time slot on Thanksgiving evening, which means it came on after the Dallas Cowboys football game, which means we watched it at my house every year when we got home from the game. And And not only that, that also means it had a hell of a lead in with people already having their TV on and just leaving the TV on to watch it afterwards. But then for whatever reason, they changed their mind. They showed Jurassic Park and they would show Jumanji and some other things. But it looked like this one was set to be one of those holiday things that people just kind of would set their clocks by. And there's one little note that says FX showed it for 24 hours straight on Thanksgiving in 2009. But it looked like that was a one-and-done thing. But
and again,
either way, it's on a lot.
Go ahead. To your point is if it had been watched a bunch, they would have continued to do that. So obviously, for whatever reason, it did not get watched as much as they thought they would, because that's really what TBS and TNT, again, kind of stumbled into this, showing it for 24 hours. And now families will watch it in parts or most of it several times in and around Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, Christmas night. So it becomes ingrained. So it's the same thing, by the way. I think it's AMC that's done this a few times with Christmas Vacation on a marathon in and around Christmas. If people are watching, they'll keep doing it year after year after year. It just didn't work, obviously, with Home Alone, at least not yet.
Nah, yeah, I think it will give it a little bit of time. It's also like, as at the time we're taping this, it's on Stars. So if you have Stars, you can go on demand and watch it whenever you want. It's on Amazon for like $2. So, you know, it's easily accessible. That's another thing is back when the tradition of Christmas Story started, we didn't have, you know, 18 different options to watch things. You know, it was, hey, we're stuck at home and it's cold. Let's watch this over and over again. You know, and by the time we watched it a few times, we can start quoting it. So before we say goodbye to everybody, is there any Christmas movies that you love that we haven't done on the show yet that you kind of like to throw out?
Christmas Story's definitely got to be in there as one of the ones. Now, we've already done Christmas Vacation that I have to watch over and over again. I don't have many other ones, though, that I have to have or have to see. What about you in that category that you're going to have to watch over these next few days, couple weeks?
There's one that me and my brothers will watch every year. It's called The Ref. Stars Dennis Leary, Kevin Spacey, Judy right. Davis. It is so funny. And, you know, Dennis Leary didn't turn into the huge, huge star they thought they were. This came from Simpson Bruckheimer. So I think they were planning on this being similar to the way that they rolled out Eddie Murphy with Beverly Hills Cop, because Dennis Leary was on his way to being a pretty big star back in the day. And this is just such a funny movie. He's a cat burglar. He's kind of doing his big last score, and it doesn't work out. His partner's a complete alcoholic, and he's the guy that's the getaway driver. And when the alarm goes off, he takes off and leaves him there. So he's stuck in this really upscale, rich Connecticut town with this family that's just bitching and moaning and bickering the whole time. And he basically ends up playing the referee amongst them. And if you haven't seen that, it's rated R. It's not one to watch with the kids, but if you want to watch it when the kids go to bed, or you want to watch it with your buddies that are back in town, it is so funny.
The Ref. Okay.
And it's one that I will definitely see.
And Leary obviously became mega, mega famous for a lot of different things, including the Rescue Me series on FX, where he's playing the firefighters, a lot of different other comedies, great stand-up comedian, a little vulgar at times, yes, great sense of humor from Boston with the Boston humor, so... love
he
it.
Did the was it the Bo Jackson commercials he did when Bo Jackson was injured?
Yes.
The Just Do It. Wasn't he part of that?
Yes. And so give it a watch there on The Ref. I know the movie. I've seen parts of the movie, and I might have to reprise that one as well. And then, you know, you've got all the other Miracle on 34th Street and White Christmas was on in my house the other night. You got all the traditional ones too, all the older ones to watch too in and around Christmas time. But I go back to A Christmas Story. I may watch Home Alone now that we've seen that, but I got to go back to A Christmas Story as my go-to.
It's hard to argue. It's a fun movie for sure, and that's, you know, the beauty of it is there's so many. You know, it's not like if you don't watch it right away, you're going to miss it. You know, like I know there's one that one of my ex-girlfriends loved. Actually, she had two that we kind of would get to rotate around, was The Holiday with Cameron Diaz and Kate Winslet, and Love Actually. Those were the two that we got to watch. So I don't know if you've seen either of those.
Mrs. Reeves has had Love Actually.
Those are pretty good.
Yes, Love Actually has been on recently too in my household. So yes, so the chick
flicks. Are you an Elf fan?
Elf, yes, with Buddy and James Caan and the whole, yes. So that's another good. See, you're stoking me now to go watch a couple of these after we're done, and we may have to reprise another one for we've seen that. Before we, you know what, you got me thinking. Well, you got me thinking here about this, that we might need to do a little double feature here on we've seen that in and around Christmas, because there's one movie you haven't mentioned as of yet that I think you and I are in complete agreement. It's a Christmas movie, despite what some would say.
There's two that I'm thinking of. Let me throw it out. First off, Bad Santa. which you have to see every Christmas.
Billy Bob Thornton.
And the other one,
which is
Billy Bob Thornton playing Bad Santa. And there's another one that some people try to say is not a Christmas movie, but I think you and I are in complete agreement. I'm thinking about Die Hard.
I think Die Hard as well. And in fact, let's do a Christmas bonus coming up here as part of We've Seen That. And you and I will go back in time to the late 1980s to the movie that really launched Bruce Willis as an action star after being a comedian and on sitcom TV with Moonlighting, and that is Die Hard. And that is absolutely a Christmas movie. We're going back to Nakatomi Plaza. We're going to a little eggnog, a little terrorist, a little shoot 'em out. Let's have some fun with some Die Hard. So that's coming up before Christmas
the
as well.
The benefits of a classical education.
Yeah, yes. And here's yes, it's Christmas, Theo. So let's do a little Christmas double feature.
So you,
here.
You want to work overtime and give our listeners
yes.
a little Christmas gift from
hopefully,
you and me?
Hopefully they enjoyed Home Alone here as we're going out with Macaulay Culkin and they'll watch the 1991. But just before it, right? Was it the year before or 2 years before?
December of 88,
there was Die Hard, and it is absolutely a Christmas movie. It's the 30th anniversary of it. I think we got to go Die Hard on a special bonus Christmas edition of We've Seen That. You up for that?
I'm willing to do it. I will drop my plans and stay on and do it.
I love it. All right, so that's coming up, another edition of We've Seen That just before Christmas. We'll have two of them. For this go-around. Did we cover it all? Did we do well enough with the John Hughes, Macaulay Culkin, tremendously successful comedy, Home Alone?
Well, I need to go throw some aftershave on my face and see how bad it stinks now that we've talked about this, because that's all I think of is him slapping his face and screaming.
Remember back
and
in the day.
Wondering why. It never hurt me that bad. I could never figure out why.
Yes, but remember when we actually had aftershave, when it was actually a liquid and no longer a gel or a cream, and that's one of the reasons why they
lotion,
did away with it.
Yeah.
A little lotion to put on if you need be. Famous Jay, I had fun talking about Home Alone. I don't know about you.
Good times. Thanks, everybody.
There is the Famous Jay again. I'm TJ Reeves. Follow us on Twitter at We've Seen That. Go to the Facebook page, We've Seen That. And we're coming up next with Die Hard right before Christmas from our partners at Radio Influence. Again, subscribe, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. The latest shows will come right to your phone, right to your iPad as we do We've Seen That. Thank you for being with us as we talked here about a Christmas classic, Home Alone. Bye.
This is a Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Everybody, here you go. You ready for this? One of my favorite people, my personal spiritual guru, my soul sister from Be Soul Studio. Welcome to Duffified Live, Sally Young.
Sometimes through the most painful periods of our life, when we feel most alone, it's really the universe kind of clearing the way so that you can, you know, just organically arrive at your truth, you know?
Yeah.
And, You just said something right there, and you said, I think I'm happy right now, and you are happy. Like, why not own that and say, you know, I am happy right now. It can only get better than that. My mantra, I think I might have told you this already. Every year for my birthday, I come up with a mantra, and this year it's, what's the best that could happen?
Oh, I like that.
What's the best that could happen?
Whereas most people would say, what's the worst that can happen?
Totally. And I actually arrived at that because I found myself as I was in a perfect scenario. I'm at the beach. I'm riding my bike blocks to the beach. It's a beautiful day, like sun shining. Like, what kind of problems could you possibly have? But as I'm riding my bike, I'm caught in all this worry. I'm worried about, you know, all kinds of things. The list is endless. And yeah. And I, in the moment, I became conscious and aware of my thoughts and was the observer of where I was placing my attention. And in that moment, I snapped out of it. I love awareness because awareness gives us a choice. You can right. stay in the shit, or you can make a choice to pull yourself out of it and see life through a different perspective. But it was in that moment that I thought, why am I planning subconsciously, I'm not even aware of it. It's so ingrained in me to worry that why would I be planning and preparing for the worst case scenario?
Right.
Why would I ever do that? Why would I not plan for the best case scenario? Why wouldn't I be saying to myself, what's the best that can happen? you know? So I've been using that mantra, and I'm sharing it with everyone. Now we're sharing with everyone on the air today, because I think that it's, you know, life is all how we look at things.
Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.